are listening to KYRS, Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM. Good afternoon. You're listening to KYRS. You're also listening to Praxis. Praxis receives support from the Smith Barbieri Progressive Fund, a charitable foundation. Information at smith-barbieri.com. And good afternoon. As I said, you're listening to Praxis. I'm your host, Taylor, and today I am live in the studio with one of my very favorite former guests, who I always like to have on the show, and a new guest who is joining him. Veterans Day is this Wednesday, and I've gone through a big sweep of that in my personal life as someone who is pretty staunchly anti-war, getting to know people, including Larry, who's one of my guests today, who have a different perspective that maybe isn't the standard patriotism model of thinking about veterans and veterans issues. And I'm really excited to have him back in the studio today. So thanks. Thank you, Susan. And I also have Nate Ostrander on the show, and we're going to be talking a little bit about each of their personal journeys, but then how equine therapy and horses, kind of not the first thing most people probably think of when they think of Veterans Day, have come around to be part of this solution for each of you. So maybe Larry, if you want to go first and just introduce yourself and talk a little bit about who you are and your story and how you got here today.
My name is Larry Shook.
Your mic is not working for some reason. Sorry about that. Let's get you on a different one. Sorry. Let's try that again.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay.
Perfect.
My name is Larry Shook. I am a Vietnam veteran with PTSD, and it's only in the last few years that it's become a crisis for me, and so that I have to work very hard at managing it. And I discovered equine therapy as an effective way to deal with it. And in that context, I met Nate Ostrander, who is a professional horseman and professional trainer. And Nate is this area's only certified Mustang trainer. And so Nate and I have linked up to create a program exploring whether wild horses can be used to train veterans with PTSD like me to train them, basically, as a way of healing PTSD.
Wow. And Nate, what's your side of that story? How did you end up working with Mustangs and meeting Larry?
Yeah. Thanks, Taylor. You know, I've worked with horses my whole life, and it wasn't until about a year or so ago that I found out that you could actually adopt Mustangs. I just never even knew that. I've learned that from watching a documentary, Wild Horse, Wild Ride, and you know, jumped right on it.
No pun intended.
Yeah, exactly. It's just one of those things where at the end of the movie, there's this little clip that says you can, if you'd like to adopt a wild horse or a burro, you know, get a hold of the BLM. And I'm going, what? I got to do that. So that's basically what I did. And I made it happen as fast as I possibly could. And, you know, went through all their things you have to do to be approved to get Mustangs and stuff. Well, in the meantime, I found out there was another program where you can, you know, get approved to train the Mustangs too for the BLM. So I did that, went through all that, and got approved. And Larry found me on the Mustang Heritage Foundation's website because they list who the trainers are. So he found me and gave me a call and just, you know, hey Nate, I'm Larry Shook. I'm a Vietnam veteran with PTSD. I'd like to talk to you about Mustangs. I'm like, okay, shoot, go. Yeah, it was awesome. We sat and just talked for a long time, and the rest is kind of history. We've been working on this project for almost a year now, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's been almost a year since you've been on the show talking to me about some of the seeds of that. So it's cool to see it develop into something real and hopefully really helpful for people. And I want to kind of, by way of introduction, Larry is also a writer and a journalist and wrote a really lovely piece that I shared on the Facebook page at facebook.com/praxisradio called Of Mustangs and Warriors that kind of tells this whole story at more length than we probably even could in an hour. But it's a beautiful piece. And I wanted to kind of by way of introduction share a little paragraph of it and jump off from there. So he says, here's our question. Can you take a 69-year-old veteran whose heart and psyche have been shattered by war and teach him to train a Mustang, a creature arrested in the heaven of open range for the crime of freedom, in a way that gives both him and the horse a new life? If the answer is yes, it could be very good news for all of us, people and horses. Good news for people, because in the 5,000 years of written history in which we have fought 15,000 wars, yep, three per year, we haven't been able to face the ugly truth in which the syndrome known as post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, rubs our faces. Namely, that war is just a form of suicide. Our project, which we also call Akata, could be good news for horses too, because it might finally help us wake up and recognize that they are mystical emissaries who can help us learn or remember the silent language of creation. Horses, seen as holy messengers and partners in healing, would enjoy much better treatment at human hands than they have so far received. So, really great introduction. And do either of you want to kind of expand on that and jump off from there?
You know, what I've learned, Taylor, about PTSD, after living with it for all my life since Vietnam, since I was 21 years old, is that it is actually a nervous system injury. And the injury is actually created by military training itself. When we teach normal human beings to kill, we violate the most deeply embedded taboo in the human character. And that in itself creates a psychological injury. It's hard to know exactly what the right term to use. Is it a psychological injury? Is it a spiritual injury? Some clinical psychologists call it a soul injury. It's an injury to the soul. But it's an injury nevertheless. It's a hidden injury of war. When we send people to war and they come back missing limbs, we can see that injury. But you can't see this hidden psychiatric injury. And soldiers, for as long as there has been war, have had to live with that. They've had to deal with it. And right now, as nearly as I can tell, there is not a warring nation on earth, and certainly not our nation, not America, that is facing the truth of what it means to take normal people and teach them to kill and then send them to kill and then just turn them loose and say, now get on with your life. And because that's what we're doing, that's the reason there's the suicide epidemic among our veterans and hideous incidences of alcoholism, drug abuse, divorce, unemployment. You can drive around this city and see the sad souls on street corners holding up cardboard signs saying homeless veteran. That's what happens when you send people to war without repairing the injury. And what the evidence shows is that equine therapy is actually a way to repair that nervous system injury. It's very effective. And that's what Nate and I are experimenting with. Hmm.
And how does that, so then specifically looking at Mustangs, I'm curious about that phrase you had in there, that they were prisoners. I don't remember the exact phrase. It's written down right here, though.
I said they were arrested in the heaven of open range for the crime of freedom.
Yeah.
And that's one reason that I feel such affinity with Mustangs. They're a wild horse. And you can't be with a horse as a human being. without learning to see the world the way a horse sees the world, because they're fundamentally different creatures than we are. They're prey animals. They're creatures of flight. We're predators. If, as a human being, you try to have a relationship with a horse on human terms, you're playing Russian roulette. Mm-hmm. If you try to learn to see the world on the horse's terms, you're rewiring your own brain. And one of the things that I experience in working with our Mustang, Akata, which is a Blackfeet Indian phrase, it means going home, is that I feel myself reconnecting with myself. When the military trains us to kill, and I was trained during the Vietnam era, when there was a draft, and you had no choice. If the government said, you're going into the military, and we're going to train you to kill, your choices were very simple. You either do what the government tells you to do, or you go to jail, or forfeit your citizenship as an American citizen, leave the country. That disconnects us from ourselves. It's a profound disconnection. And what working with a Mustang does, what working with a horse does, but especially a Mustang, is it reconnects me to the universe. It reconnects me to myself because it reconnects me to the universe. Because the horse, the Mustang, knows what it is. He knows exactly where he is in the universe, in the mm-hmm. solar system. And when you connect with him, you feel yourself connecting with all that is, with the stars, in a way that you can't otherwise. It's very, very hard to find words to use to describe this. That's about as close as I can come. But what I can tell you is that it is medicine. And what the VA has to offer, drugs, to numb the injury, is not medicine. It's not healing. Mm-hmm. And the forms of psychotherapy that the VA has to offer. In one case, the form of psychotherapy that they call immersion therapy makes the PTSD worse in one-third of the cases. The other therapy, cognitive behavior therapy, just works to change your opinion about what happened. Well, it's not so bad. It's not so bad. Mm-hmm. It's not so bad. Your DNA knows that it's bad. And working with the horse bypasses that kind of cultural bias.
Mm-hmm.
The horse is a very authentic being. And when you connect with that being, you connect with something far deeper than human culture.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's important that you point out the timeline in this essay, both of war, the timeline of war being 5,000
years
or so, 15,000 wars during that time, which is also mind blowing. But pointing out that timeline, but then also pointing out this is another chunk from that essay that leads right into what we're talking about, that the Akata hypothesis is that war is a product of human consciousness and that horse sense is an alternative consciousness that can heal the injuries of war and, as Dr. Shea recommends, help humanity work to prevent war. Humanity has never done that. We're not doing it now. One of the most damning pieces of evidence of this that I know of is what psychologist Warrior Grossman, that's Colonel...
Dave Grossman,
calls the paradox of combat psychiatry. And he argues that the problem is that the military does not want to simply return the psychiatric casualty to normal life. It wants to return him to combat. In On Killing, Lieutenant Colonel Grossman's book, he cites the evidence that throughout history, most soldiers have been loath to kill. The misimpression that they are natural bloodthirsty killers comes from the ugly glorified distortions of self-aggrandized militarized history. Lieutenant Colonel Grossman's chilling tour de force of scholarship describes, among other things, how Brigadier General S.L.A. Marshall, the Army official, World War II combat historian, and a World War I combat veteran himself, documented that in World War II, 80-85% of riflemen did not fire their weapons at an exposed enemy, even to save their lives and the lives of their friends. In previous wars, non-firing rates were similar. In Vietnam, the non-firing rate was close to 5%. What happened? And I think you can maybe summarize what was the change between, World War II, Korea, and Vietnam, that somehow broke that thing in people, the don't kill response.
I'm really
our brain.
Glad you picked up on that quote, Taylor. The change was that the military started using what Lieutenant Colonel Grossman calls psychological warfare against its own soldiers, brainwashing. I was brainwashed. If you try to teach me to kill, my response is going to be, no, it's not the way my mother raised me. You can make a killer out of me by brainwashing me. And that is what we have done, and that's what he points out in that book. Excuse me. It's very important to note that Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman was an Army Ranger. That's an elite soldier. He was also he's a clinical psychologist, and he was also the psychology professor at West Point. So this is not what we would think of as a peacenik. This is a soldier telling the truth about what war is. War is murder. And the only part of the human population that will murder naturally are those with antisocial personality disorder, psychopaths, sociopaths. That's about 2% of the population. If you want to get the average person to kill, you have to corrupt their character. The Army has learned how to do that by using brainwashing.
Mm. And something that I wonder about that I don't want to linger on too long, but how do you think since in that 50 years now, just about, since that tactic is being used in the U.S. in training, how do you think that's rippled out to, I mean, into current conflicts, but also just into society at large? I mean, it's Vietnam's part of our consciousness culturally in this country, and the U.S. hasn't really stopped with violent military action around the world since then. How do you think has that trickled into society at large?
Again, Taylor, that's a great question. I would recommend that everybody get Lieutenant Colonel Grossman's book on killing. You can order it on Amazon. He ends the book addressing that very issue, and he refers to what he calls a cult of violence that is gripping society, and it's particularly gripping this country, and we see it every day with all these shootings at schools and in public places and so forth. It's a result, he says, and he's not alone in making this argument. It's a result of the massive desensitization that the entertainment industry and so forth does. These absolutely chilling video games that we let our children play. That kind of brainwashing has trickled out into our culture, and we're reaping the whirlwind of it. And he warns that we've gone down a very, very dark path, and we have to turn.
Yeah. And so that, like you said, well, first of all, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Praxis on KYRS. I'm talking with Larry Shook and Nate Ostrander about this approach that they've developed. Other people have developed it around, but you've really brought it to this region of using horses, mustangs, equine therapy for healing post-traumatic stress disorder, something that generally by a lot of people is looked at as curable, really. It's something that you have with you forever, which is probably still true. But and it represents, as you pointed out, new programming in the brain, used really literally, like as if your brain is a computer, puts a new program in there. Looking at deprogramming that, how do horses play into that deprogramming and reprogramming? You talked about it a little bit, but what about them specifically? What's the magic element there?
Magic is a good word. They teach us an alternative way of seeing the world. They teach us to behave differently if we approach them that way. And my introduction to Nate was seeing him do that. But the very first time I saw Nate work with a horse and work with a person, I saw magic. And I mean, I literally said to myself, I want to be like Nate. I've tried to access the world of horses actually since Vietnam, and I've had a very hard time doing it because most horse training, traditional horse training, is abusive. And I didn't know enough about horses to understand why I couldn't stand to be around their broken spirits. Nate's approach is fundamentally different. He does not anthropomorphize horses at all. He uses what's called natural horsemanship as opposed to traditional horsemanship, which imposes our will on the horse. What Nate does is he communicates with the horse the way horses communicate with each other. It's not a natural thing for us to do, but when we do it, it rewires the brain. And I see, every day I work with Nate, I see horses transform before my eyes. People bring their horses to Nate in many cases because they're dangerous. And in a very brief period of time, Nate brings about a behavioral change in that animal that actually is a result of neurological rewiring on the part of the animal.
Can you talk about that a little bit and what how you learned that and what those differences are between?
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I explained to somebody not too long ago about horses is, you know, we talk about the sixth sense a lot, and it's one of those things where it's, yeah, some people think it's true, some of them, Well, in the horse world, it's real. It's a sense that they have that is as real as touch or smell or sight. It is an energy awareness. Okay, they are very aware of energy and the way it works. So when it's impossible to learn without doing it. So the only way I learned how to do this with horses was to be around horses and work with them. And you have to be able to open your mind and allow yourself to feel and allow energy and, you know, your emotions to run through their courses and change. And you learn how to deal with those emotions differently when you're working with a horse. You're basically forced to, you know yourself better. Okay. And I think that's one big thing why this helps with PTSD so much, working with horses. Because even people without PTSD can feel, you know, differences when they work with horses. It's like, wow, it's just something. And most of the time they can't explain what it is. It's just, there's something about it. And for me, what that thing is this energy connection that you always thought was only in the movies. But it's real. And as a human, we don't know how to do it and we don't know how to use it. But when you start working with a horse, you're forced to. Because they can feel everything you feel before you even know that you're feeling it. They know your energy. They know if you're excited. They know if you're sad. They know if you're happy. And they know if you're angry. They know if you're scared. All those things before you even know. I was just telling somebody today about getting on Akita, because we've gotten to the step where we're going to actually get on him. And I said, you know, this horse, what we've seen him do under a saddle, you know, when he blows up and bucks, he is just a massive horse, big, strong beast of a horse. I mean, I paused a video once where he was in mid air in a buck and his feet were at least 2.5 feet off the ground. All four feet, yes. Ooh. All 4 feet, you know, maybe 3 feet. I mean, what's this? Like this far? Yeah. That's like 3 feet. Anyways.
And probably, I mean, that's a few solid, that's what, 500 pounds? I don't know how many pounds a horse is. I have no concept.
No, we're talking 1,200 pounds.
Oh, okay. Well, so it's like a giant car floating up into the air.
That's right.
with emotion and intention. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, and I've told Larry this a lot of times. It is scary working with horses. It's scary working with Mustangs. It's scary when they look like they're going to charge you and come and try to kill you. Heck yeah. You look at me and you watch me work with them and I don't look scared. You know, I look like I'm just doing stuff, you know, working with the horse. but it is scary. So don't get me wrong. It scares me. But I have learned how to deal with that feeling differently and not allow myself to be overcome by these emotions or by, you know, thoughts or by the fear and things like that. So getting back to getting on Akata, it's basically, this is scary because this guy can buck, like, huge, bigger than I've seen, you know, other than like rodeo style stuff. But like, this is scary, but I cannot let him know. I can't allow those feelings to elevate my adrenaline levels or anything at all. So I am actually consciously, as a human being, rewiring myself already to deal with these emotions and feelings on a level that a horse can just sense in energy. So I'm already now bringing myself into that sixth sense, you know, kind of zone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a huge part of why it helps so much with PTSD and the rewiring that Larry's talking about.
Mm-hmm. It's also a remembering. I mean, as you pointed out in a different article that you wrote, dealing with equine therapy in general, I think you talked about how humans' relationship with horses is ancient. You know, it's a pre-civilized part of our consciousness to have this relationship with these specific animals and with, you know, others through history. But this is one that we really know and can trace, and it's older than war, right? I mean, so on some level, it's a remembering of being connected to all things in a way that was just the only way that life was possible for most of human history. Not written history, but human existence. Do you think that that's part of it? Like, kind of getting back into that primordial connection point? Or is that less possible?
Well, there's a reason, and I think it's a mystical reason. There's a reason that human beings were attracted to horses. I mean, the first person who got on a horse, you know, what was that person thinking?
Yeah.
There's a very, very strong magnetism there. I just want to build on something that Nate just said. In that essay that you're quoting from, Taylor, you can actually see Nate working with a horse. And what you are seeing is beyond words. I don't know how to describe it. I couldn't put into words what you see him doing. It's graceful. It's positive. There's just a lot going on. And basically, to learn how to do it, first of all, you have to watch somebody do it. You couldn't read a book and learn how to do it. You have to watch somebody do it. And then you have to attempt it yourself. And I'll just share with you, there was in one of my early experiences with Akata, I was desensitizing him using a plastic bag. You can see it in that video. And I scared him. He blew up. And I suddenly felt that I was surrounded by a hoof storm. And it's like, he wasn't trying to kick me. He was trying to kick the plastic bag that I was holding up. And I was trying to show him that it wasn't going to eat him. But all it would have taken is for him to miss or for me to get caught in the crossfire, and I would have been dead. So you're in the presence of death, basically. And while I was going around and around with that horse, I was scared, and I could feel my adrenaline pumping. I felt this I felt what I think of as my door gunner eyes. I felt this hardness come into my eyes. And it's the way that I know how to deal with fear. It's like, okay, you're trying to kill me. I may die. That's fine. I'm going to do my job. And I realized as I was dancing around that horse, my gosh, I'm trying to convince this horse that I'm not a predator. And here I am in this door gunner mindset. That in itself, that simple recognition changed my brain. Mm-hmm. And it's like, man, you got to come up with another pitch here, because this just isn't going to work. And, you know, I did it as long as I could. Nate, I had to hand it over to Nate, because I was so flushed with adrenaline that my hand was shaking so much. It was like, I was rattling the plastic bag in the horse's face when I was trying to calm the horse down. And Nate had to come in and show me how to do it. And I was able to progress from there. That changed me. And I feel those changes coming on in me all the time.
Yeah, yeah. And another huge part of working with the horse that we've talked about a lot is the trust building. That what Larry's told me, one of the things about PTSD kind of destroys your trust in pretty much everything and everybody, right?
Yep.
Working with a horse, you are forced to build a trust relationship between the two of you. So, again, here we are rewiring your brain to do something that you've basically kicked out as something feasible to do, right? So now we're teaching you, yes, you can trust, and you have to. You know, a good example of this is just, I don't know, a week ago or so, 2 weeks ago, something. I had my oldest son go in and work with Akata. He's pretty horse savvy. He's worked with him a bit, but not that much. He's only 13. But I just thought, I want to have him go in and feel Akata and have Akata feel him. So I had him just lunging him around in a circle. And I asked him, how's that feel? And he goes, good. Cool. I was like, okay. All right, well, let's get him going a little bit more. Get him trotting, you know. So he did. I said, okay. You feel that? Because I could see that Akata was getting a little more anxiety, and I can feel it from outside the pen even. I said, you feel that? And he said, no. And I said, okay. You need to open your mind, buddy. Open your mind and focus on that horse and listen to him. I said, you can't hear him. Obviously, you can't speak. But listen to what you're feeling. So I let him go around a little bit more, and I said, okay, now, just ask him to walk. Don't say it out loud, but just ask him to walk. Just ask him if he would you just walk? In however way you want to ask him, just ask him if he would just go ahead and walk. So Akata trotted around a little bit, and I said, you're going to have to convince him that this is okay to do. And within another, like, 3 steps, Akata just stopped and went to a walk. And my son, his eyes just got huge, wide-eyed, and was like, whoa! And I said, yeah. Now you feel it. He said, yeah, I feel that now, you know. So that was a moment where he actually got to connect with that horse through that sixth sense thing that we talk about, and he actually got to build a piece of trust between the two of them. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, I think, is a really, you know, big rewire for anybody, especially someone with PTSD, which is what you experienced at the Saratoga Warhorse thing with your join-up. It's kind of that same thing. You can experience that kind of thing in a couple different ways, I think. But
How important for him to be that young too, yeah, and have something like that happen. I mean, yeah, talking about like preventive measures when military recruiters are targeting children, really. I mean, yeah, I feel a comfortable distance now to say that you're a child when you're 18 in a lot of ways. You're adult in some ways, but your brain is not adult yet. And to go in and do that, I think, is a deeply immoral thing to do, and that we don't have rites of passage in our society, and that if young people can have experiences like that, it equips them a lot more to be critical when someone tries to come at them and say, it's okay to kill people. It's actually heroic. You know, it's really important.
But. Yeah. The, one of the foremost, books on the subject of PTSD is called, Trauma and Recovery by a psychiatrist, Dr. Judith Herman. And she points out that the clinical evidence shows that PTSD and rape trauma syndrome are identical. Clinically, they're the same thing. During World War I, 40% of British casualties were psychiatric casualties. Those casualties were actually the same as what results from rape. Well, what is that injury? You can't get an X-ray of it. Actually, now we can get MRIs of the brain changes that are associated with that. But you can't say, oh, here's the broken bone, and here's how we're going to fix the bone. But something breaks, and it is physical. There is literature using equine therapy with rape victims that shows that the recovery using equine therapy is superior to all other treatment modalities, pharmaceutical, psychotherapy, and so forth. Something is mended. And it's very difficult to be linguistically precise in describing what it is, but I will tell you that I have felt it. In working with Akata, I have felt that mending. I felt, when I was in Vietnam, I had a particular experience in which I felt, I would have to say I felt my spirit break. But it was like a bone snapping. And it was a terrifying feeling because I could tell how serious it was. I've lived with that for 50 years now. And there was an evening this summer when I was out there working with Akata, and I could actually feel that mending.
Wow.
And our point is that, I mean, Nate and I don't know how to teach society to not rely on war. You don't. None of us do. We wouldn't be going to war if we knew how not to go to war. But I think one thing we can all agree on is that if you send people to war and you injure them, you owe them a duty to heal. Nobody would say, well, if you get your leg blown off, we're not going to try to outfit you with a fancy prosthetic. We do that. But the military training, this is the reality of war that humanity has not faced the truth about. The military training that teaches us to kill creates a psychiatric injury that is analogous to the loss of a limb. And what we're saying is, if you're going to give people that kind of training, you owe them a duty to give them the kind of training that can help repair that. And that's one of the things we're trying to establish with this program that we're experimenting with.
Yeah, and it's a really tough process, too, to figure out how to make, you know, a program, or what we were talking about earlier was a syllabus. You know, we're trying to come up basically with a syllabus like in school where you say, well, this is what you're going to learn and this and this and this and this. We're trying to figure out what things specifically have more of an effect on the PTSD than others. So that way we can be very specific in the stuff that we're having, you know, veterans do with the horses so that it does help. You know, there's been a few things that we've come across with the horses, with Akata and Larry, where, you know, some stuff is pretty heightening in the adrenaline, and it's like, holy moly, that I don't think that helped the PTSD, you know, situation. Okay, well, how, you know, this learning process for us, how can we change that and make it so it will be okay and it will be good? So by the time we're done with Akata and this first kind of round of doing it with Larry and Akata, the goal is that we know all the things that work and all the things that didn't work. So that way we can write a program and a syllabus that says, here's what we got. We're going to take you through these steps and these things with the horse, and you are going to find, you know, a new life, basically. You're going to find yourself again, and a lot of good things are going to be happening. That's not to say that we can predict any animal or horse. You know, stuff happens, and they can blow up and get heightened anxiety and things. But that is also part of the process of, you know, healing this PTSD and rewiring us to, you know, to, like I said earlier, learning how to deal with some of the emotions in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're kind of, Larry, you're kind of a guinea pig twice then, right? In being part of this first generation of Vietnam, you know, trainees who really had this intentional psychological aspect to your training that did this, that injured you in that way. And then being really, it sounds, I mean, it's pretty groundbreaking stuff. It's not stuff that's really happened outside of the last decade, to my knowledge. So you're part of the guinea pig of healing now.
Yeah.
As well.
In Vietnam, what I'm doing was called walking point. And the analogy that's occurred to me is that scene in the movie Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, where they're on the ledge and the posse's coming, and Butch says, well, we have to jump. And the kid said, I'm not going to jump. Why not? Because I can't swim. And Butch said, oh, you fool, the fall's probably going to kill you. Well, I have a potentially deadly disease. PTSD is a deadly disease. I have a heck of an incentive to heal from it. And our society doesn't have anything to offer me. I've been to the VA. What the VA has to offer doesn't work for me. Drugs and so forth don't work for me. And I really don't want to go to my grave with a broken heart that I brought back from Vietnam. And it's like, you know, I'm 69 years old now. I've had a good long run. So as I said today, you know, if I break my neck doing this, it's like no harm, no foul. Not that I'm cavalier about it. I'm not. And I'm especially not cavalier about it because we have to develop a curriculum that's very protective of people with PTSD. Mm-hmm. We've got to say, we don't want to hurt you. We're trying to figure out something that will heal you, that will make you feel better. And we're both really happy to do the experiment to see if we can figure it out. I'm just incredibly fortunate to have run into Nate. Not only is he a gifted horseman, he's a professional teacher. He's a teacher by training. He's a music instructor. He's a musician, et cetera, et cetera. He really knows how to teach, and he is a gifted teacher. So, I think we make a good team to try to figure this out.
Wow. And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Praxis on KYRS, Thin Air Community Radio, talking with Larry Shook and Nate Ostrander, Veterans Day show, talking about working specifically with veterans and wild Mustangs, kind of kindred spirits in a certain way, to heal PTSD and look at PTSD through a totally different lens. So this hour is kind of flying by. How you just said that we don't know how to prevent war and get people off of their addiction to war, but what have each of you learned through this process that might give us some clues of kind of spreading this understanding through broader society? What does that look like?
You know, for me, as a person who doesn't have PTSD, I mentioned this in the video. You know, I didn't really know anything about it before I met Larry. And it was one of those things, like I say in the video, that most people are like, PST or something or other, you know, oh, yeah, I've heard of it. And then, mm-hmm. you know, what's for lunch or what's next? Let's get onto a different subject because people don't want to talk about it. And it's uncomfortable. But we know it's real. There's something, you know, we've heard about it. So when Larry got in touch with me and I started reading about it, and he sent me a bunch of really awesome literature and information on it, and it was just hit me like a ton of bricks, you know. And I realized that I could actually do something about it and help. So really working with the horses and allowing people to understand that this is actually something that works and that can be a healing process. Yeah, we can't stop war and we can't, you know, get the government to quit sending people to war. But at least maybe we can get the people to say, hey, at least send them to go work with Nate Ostrander and Larry Shook afterwards with a horse and get some healing, you know, or something, you know, get some of these programs going. So at least we can get people healing after being sent to war like this. That's my side of it that I'm getting out of all this.
You know, Plato said only the dead have seen the end of war. And it's an article of faith that humanity is a warlike species and there's always going to be war. I'll just say bluntly, I don't buy that. That is a result of consciousness. And there are many, many, many solutions to war. If you want to talk about how could we avoid war, there are many, many solutions to war that I could think of. Here's one. Here's a simple one. We're the most powerful military nation in history. We believe in war. America believes in war. My perspective is, fine, let's be darn sure that all of us go to war then. Every one of us. As long as we're going to have a military, bring back the draft so that everyone is subject to going to war. If you want to hold elected office in this society that sends people to war, you go to war first. If you're the president or if you're a senator or a congressman, be sure if you vote to go to war that you've got a second. So that the second can take over your administrative duties so that you can go be online with those young troops that you're sending to war. How long do you think it would be before we could come up with some alternatives to going to war so cavalierly if we did that? There are many simple solutions to what we're doing. That's one of them. But the point that Nate just made that he and I both agree on is that there's no debate in our society that if you send people to war and they get injured, quote, defending our freedom, you ought to help mend them. And right now, as Lieutenant Colonel Grossman points out, our society is not doing that. This paradox of combat psychiatry that he talks about, the whole purpose of the way we treat PTSD isn't to help heal the sufferer, it's to send them back to war. That would be like going to a doctor and having the doctor say, you know what, you've got lung cancer. You came to me soon enough. I can save you from the lung cancer. But here's the deal. You got to stop smoking. If you go back to smoking, you're going to get lung cancer again and you're going to die. Imagine if that doctor said, yeah, I can save you, but you have to start smoking again. That's what the paradox of combat psychiatry is. What we're saying is at least solve part of that paradox by putting in place programs that can mend the nervous system, that can repair the nervous system from the damage of training people to kill and then sending them to kill. Modern science tells us we are capable of neurogenesis. We can generate new brain tissue. Every day, literally every day that I work with Nate, I feel new brain tissue being generated in myself.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, what do you think the possibilities are for this new, because it's new science also. That's part of the lapse here. Is that a lot, most neuroscience is fairly new. And I think especially around trauma, it's quite new. What are the prospects for that kind of penetrating into the military system and getting some better understanding into those systems, you know?
Close to zero.
Okay.
Because of the military mindset. What are the prospects of getting that understanding and concern about it into the public? Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
The public cares. It's very important. This is not going to change until the public reminds the military and reminds the government who the employer and who the employee is. Once the employers, the public, understand this, I believe they will mandate the change. And a hope that I have as a result of our program is that Nate and I will prove this. And then what I intend to do is seek the kind of fundraising necessary to take it to the next increment of development. I envision going to the Warren Buffetts and Bill Gates of the world and saying, you need to fund this. We're saving lives. You need to fund it. And then I'd very much like to testify before Congress and say, now, as an integral part of taxing the public to send people to war, you need to create a program like this. I received 4 months of military training before they sent me to combat. My gosh. If you send people into combat at least give them 4 months of training that can be the sort of counter conditioning necessary to give them a hope at having a happy, productive life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a close friend who never saw combat in the Air Force, but just through the training process was deeply disturbed and wanted a psychiatric discharge and was denied it because he basically said, "This is insane. I feel like I'm losing my mind because no one else sees that this is insane." And they said, "Well, we ran all the tests and you're just fine." You know, it's a catch-22 situation of you're just fine and you'll get used to it was basically the best they could offer. And then later, you know, the best that can be offered is psychiatric drugs, apparently, but that are, I would assume, based on science that assumes a quote-unquote normal brain and how these drugs will interact with it. Is that fair?
There's an anecdote I'd like to share with you. I'm mindful of our time. How much time do we have?
Oh, we've got 7 minutes.
Okay. So there is a horseman in town. I'm not going to mention his name, but he's a prominent horseman. He's a well-known guy who is actually a bombardier on a B-52 during Vietnam. Served four Vietnam tours. Had friends who were killed, friends who were taken, became POWs, et cetera, et cetera. And when he served his last tour as a bombardier, they made an instructor out of him for navigators and bombardiers. And they noticed that people kept leaving his class in disturbing numbers. And one day, like half of his class walked out en masse. And his commanding officer brought him in and he said, "What are you telling these people? What's going on?" And he said, "I'm telling them that they're going to be killing people. And if they have a problem with that, they might want to think about what they're doing." So what did his commanding officer do? He wrote him up for psychiatric referral. And this guy saw an Air Force psychiatrist for years. And constantly he was terrified that they were going to put him in a straitjacket. He was literally afraid of that. He was afraid they were going to say, "You're crazy. We're going to put you in a mental institution." Finally, one day he was meeting with the psychiatrist, who was a colonel, an Air Force colonel. And the psychiatrist asked him a question that he thought was a trick question. The psychiatrist said, "Do you know what normal is?" And this guy was terrified. He thought, "I'm going to be in a straitjacket." And he finally said, "No, I don't know what normal is." And the psychiatrist said, "Normal is what you get used to." That's what those of us who are trained to kill deal with in our society. Our society thinks it's normal. It's not. Killing is not normal. If it was normal, you wouldn't have to use brainwashing to teach people to kill. If it was normal, those of us who receive that trauma would not have these hideous rates of suicide, chemical dependency, et cetera, et cetera. It's not normal. That's the wonderful news about PTSD. The beautiful thing about PTSD is that we're better than the way we're behaving right now.
Yeah. And, gives me chills. It's good. How can people contact either of you, find out more about this? The essay we've been referencing is on rhubarbskies.net. It's linked on my Facebook page at facebook.com/praxisradio. It's called Of Mustangs and Warriors. I can post some other links in the podcast notes as well. But what resources would you point people to, or how can people who are hearing this find out more about what's going on?
Yeah, the best place to go is to Two Eyes Horsemanship on Facebook. So it's just facebook.com/Two Eyes Horsemanship. Yeah, as in two, not three, you know, TWOEYES, horsemanship. And we've got videos up there of Akata and pictures, and, you know, we put posts and things like that. There's descriptions in the About section if you wanted to learn about kind of the strategy and style of our training. And you can message us right there as well with any questions. You can post comments and all sorts of stuff that you can do on Facebook. You could email you could email me directly if you wanted to. I think that's on Facebook too. You can find that info on there and phone numbers and all that. So that would be the best place to go. Facebook, Two Eyes Horsemanship.
Great. And Larry, do you have any other further reading, contact info type stuff for people in these last couple of minutes?
You know, I put a lot of resources in that essay that you're referring to, Taylor, and that's a good place to start. I would just encourage anybody who's interested in this, I would encourage to go to Two Eyes Horsemanship and start following those links and, you know, make contact with Nate. He's an incredible resource in our community. And it's potentially the beginning of a new life for people.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, sharing the stuff that we're doing, sharing that article on Rhubarb Sky and the video, and sharing our posts from Two Eyes Horsemanship, that's, you know, the biggest compliment that we can get from anybody is you sharing what we're doing. Because we're just trying to get the word out and get people involved as much as we can.
Yeah, and do either of you have just any closing thoughts as we close up the show today?
Not really.
No, I'm very grateful to you, Taylor, for having us on.
Yeah,
thank you.
Really nice.
Yeah, I'm glad you've been so willing to share your story all these couple times. This is either your second or third, so you're welcome back anytime. And now you are too.
Thank you.
So, yeah, thank you both. And if you're just joining me, you're listening to Praxis on KYRS Thin Air Community Radio. To connect with the show on Facebook, you can go to facebook.com/PraxisRadio, PraxisRadio. You can also email me at praxis@kyrs.org. That's praxis@kyrs.org. If you are listening this summer to the Summer Roadshow, I'd like to extend an invitation to all listeners to come to a potluck at the community building, this building we're in now at 35 West Main. I'm going to have a public event on November 20th. It's a Friday night at 6 p.m. to talk about the things that I saw there on the road this summer and invite people to join me in talking about what we can be working on here in Spokane. So more information about that is on the Facebook page. Just a little nuts and bolts announcement at the end. But if you missed the beginning of this show and want to hear it, the podcast will be posted. There's a link on the KYRS.org website to that. And please feel free to widely share that with other people you think need to hear this show today with Nate Ostrander and Larry Shook. And I thank you both for being here again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM. Lost, a mind paints a lovely landscape.